we go again, it's the game we love.
Play game.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. This is Winner's Bias, America's first, best, and only live board game radio show.
Until proven otherwise.
A show about board games and timing everything just right. I'm your host, Nate, and with me is my buddy, James. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, thanks, Nate. I'm doing a lot better than the last time you guys had to do this show without me.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm having trouble with this arm, so right. that's all right.
I heard everyone was very sad that I wasn't there.
They were devastated.
Like, where's the funny English one? This is why we listen.
Yeah, well, we actually we recorded a backup to this because I was traveling yesterday, and so you'll never get to hear all the golden nuggets that we produced then.
It was very hilarious. It was the funniest one we've ever done.
The funniest thing we've ever done. Actually, it's a lot of pre-recorded interviews that James did at PAX Unplugged a month ago?
It was about a month ago, yeah. Beginning of September. Yeah.
Yeah. So you may be asking yourself, well, if you already recorded your show, why are you doing it live? Why didn't you sleep in, Nate? And, well, we have an announcement from a follow-up from our last show that James missed with malice.
I know.
And aforethought, it had nothing to do with being sick. It was all that James was just done with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's not true at all.
I'm not a fan of national parks, so yeah, I'm not coming in today.
So last week we had people were able to enter into a drawing until yesterday, and we were just blown away that people responded.
I know, I didn't expect that many people to respond. Yeah. I thought it was just us two talking to the ether. But
yeah.
No, people actually listen to this.
It's crazy. It's what are you all doing?
Yeah.
Thank you. We appreciate that. We also thank you so much to Rick and Mary from Brickhouse Games for offering a copy of Northwest for us to give away. And so we just threw all the names into a random number generator and we hit click. That was the only click. There was no clicky clacky of the spinning wheel of, you know, digital number generators don't have the same amount of fun. But JW was our winner. And their favorite state forest in this case, was Tillamook State Forest, which is beautiful.
Yeah, and I actually do know that one. I've been there. I camp there every year. It's one of the ones I do know.
That's great. So Jay will be in contact with you after this and setting you up with Rick and Mary for them to get your details. The game will ship in January. We'll have that going for you there. So James, we have a little bit of time for you to set up what exactly PAX West is before we go to the first interview that you and a few of your friends conducted.
Well, PAX is a giant convention. PAX stands for Penny Arcade Expo, which you might know from the comic strip. And I guess they created this huge expo that started off, I don't know how it started off, but I think it's mostly video games, board games, tabletop games, crafts in that kind of area of things. And it's over a 4-day weekend of Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. And it's just in Seattle.
Yeah, and why did we make you do interviews?
Because you forced me to do it. No, we're just going, and you was like, "Hey, if you want to, since we have this show, you can do some interviews." And I was like, "I'm going there for fun, but if I find anyone, then I might interview." Which is something you want to bring up.
Yeah, and James said I'm outing you now because I don't think anyone ever would have heard this.
Makes it even better.
Yeah. He said, we're going to find all the people we can interview. And he came back with two.
Yeah, that's it.
Which is great because James did amazing interviews and I felt so bad cutting them down that they're both roughly like between 7 and 9 minutes, which takes up a fair amount of our showtime. So, and that's cut down. I may put the full interviews online afterwards in case anyone wants to listen to a bit more of what they had to offer. But, Yeah, James, let's see if I've got this all queued up right. And we'll start with the first interview, which is Nick from The Game Roast.
Yes.
So let's make sure this is working right, and I hope you enjoy.
Okay, we are here today at PAX West. I am talking with Nick. Nick, please explain why we're here today for you.
So this is my very first PAX West. I created a game with my brother a little bit over a year ago. So the game is called Roast, and it's about roasting marshmallows and making s'mores.
What kind of game is it? Like, how do you play it?
It's a pretty casual game. It's a lot like poker, but a little bit mixed with Uno. So there's a lot of gacha cards, attack, defense, quick action like that. But there's also a lot of slow building play.
We were lucky enough to get a hands-on demonstration on it. And you told us there are multiple ways you can play it, that you don't have to stick to the main rules. How would you explain that?
Yeah, so of course, when we first started creating the game, it was just for family and friends. We didn't even think that we would turn it into a game at all. The first version we made was on construction paper, and we forced our friends and family to use scissors to hand cut it out because we couldn't afford to get a real deck created. And they just really liked it that much that they said, you guys have to make this into a game. And so we got a little bit of money together and printed our first copy. And then we started sending it around and around. And every time we would play it, someone would have a new variation and a new rule, something like that, that would come up. So it wasn't the variety of ways to play that was the challenge. The challenge was which version would be the best for beginners to adopt and then build upon from there, because there are lots and lots of house rules that you can add to this game.
You said it was like an easygoing, cozy game to play. Mm-hmm. So hopefully it's easy for new people to come in. How did you design the game to make it easy enough for people to come in? What aspects of the game would make it easy for new game players to pick up this game?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I actually have a niece and a nephew, 7 and 9, and that was the ideal bottom end of the game play. So we wanted to make sure that they could play it. So we did a lot of extensive testing with them to say, do you understand? Do you get the game? You know, what did you like? What did you didn't like? You know, so we were just basically going right to the fans and saying, you know, so what part of this was fun? Did you wait too long? What did you want to do right then and there? And so we would take out some cards and we would add some cards in. They would have special abilities that would just make the game so much more complex that someone at 7 or 8 would never think that many steps ahead. And even though it might be fun for more advanced players, we would remove that at first, and then we realize, well, we don't actually have to take that out at all. What we can do then is we'll just modify the rules such that only in an advanced play mode will this become active. And so people who are just getting started, it's so easy to see who's roasting what and what the point levels are and what the cards do. But in the more advanced versions, we turn things upside down and people keep things more secret, and you can start to gamble even the marshmallow s'mores that you've already made. So the points you thought were locked in can then all of a sudden become back in play again.
That's perfect. So you can have like an easy mode to bring in the family and your kids. And then you have like a harder mode for the more mature players and people who understand how it's going on.
And so for me, I'm like, you decided to make a game about s'mores. And the tone is cartoony and wholesome, and I really like it. So my question is, like, what's your connection to that, you know, American tradition of campfires and s'mores and the whole thing? Why make a s'mores game?
That is the question, isn't it? Yeah. Well, so in 2020, I got COVID really, really, really badly. Long COVID, the whole deal, couldn't breathe, stuff like that. And I couldn't stare at a screen either. It was just too much blue light, or I'm not sure what, but I had to stop altogether all digital media. And my brother and I were big gamers, obviously staring at the screen a lot. And so it changed the nature of our relationship. And we either had to let our relationship go because we didn't live in the same place, or we had to start finding ways to connect outside of the screen. So he bought an RV. And we started traveling the national parks because we remembered when we were kids, our dad had us in the Boy Scouts, which at the time we thought, you know, we were kind of dorky and lame Boy Scouts with our neckerchiefs and things like that. But as we, you know, grew and we looked back and we were like, it was pretty wholesome, you know, a lot of time outdoors in nature gave us a really good appreciation for the wilderness and leaving things better than the way that you found it. And, you know, we were in a bit of a transitioning period. Everybody was during that time. And we were just coming back to our roots and asking, you know, like, what really brought us together? What made us happy? And being around the campfire made us happy. And so as we were traveling, we said, how could we get more people into this? How can we get them away from sitting on a couch staring at a screen and start looking at each other again. And we said, well, when we play tabletop games, we're looking at each other. And so we said, well, why don't we make a game? You know, and it was just to bring our family together. I literally planned a family reunion so that we could play this game and spend time with each other, because we felt so disconnected. And whatever reason, whatever it was, COVID kind of pushed me out of that bubble. And it said, hey, man, what are you doing with your life? It's, you know, time is running out. It's short. Spend it with the ones that you love. And so that's why we built the game.
So a wholesomeness made a wholesome game.
That's perfect. I would say if the shape of my relationship with my brother could be made into a physical form, it would look exactly like this game. It's very cute and sweet and nice on the outside, but there's also like a lot of secret viciousness on the inside, which we have a lot of fun with. You know, we love each other and we're brothers, so you know, we fight a little bit, but it's always, you know, been cute and wholesome.
The full family dynamics.
Yeah. Actually, you really touched on something I really love about games, and that's that they interface both ways with our relationships with the people we play them with the people we spend time with. You know, you iteratively play a game inside your family, and there takes on this, like, this politics or this, like, you know, I know every time you play, you're going to treat me like this, and I'm going to get ahead of you and like take care of you first, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to hear your thoughts on games on that level, how they affect our relationships and are affected by our relationships, in this case with your family, but with anyone we're choosing to spend this kind of time with.
Yeah, that's interesting. Just here at PAX West, I have seen enough groups of people come through that I have changed the way that I play my game based on the way that they look at each other. I can tell from the way that they give each other the eyes, is this going to be a peaceful, nice game? Are we going to roast marshmallows and see who just happens to end up with the most points? Or is somebody here going to just try and destroy everything all the time? And so sometimes I'm there and I'm roasting big sticks. I've got huge marshmallows, 45 points, 50 points on the board, and I'm not worried at all. And other times, as soon as I get 2 or 3 points, whoosh, I make a s'more, because I know that the person next to me is going to destroy everything as soon as they get the chance. So it shows up immediately the way that people relate to each other. And, you know, in my own family, we have those, like you said, long-standing dynamics that occur and appear. When I started playing games with my parents, it was a way to connect with them as well. And I'd always seen my parents as my parents. They love me, they care about me. Until, of course, my mom started to destroy me in these games. My own mother was just ruining me, and I couldn't get around the idea that she was a person with her own strategies and ways of being as well, until we started playing these games. I'm like, oh, my mom is ruthless. Wow, my mom is ruthless.
My mom,
okay,
throws elbows.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. She beat me at Love Letter.
There you go.
That was like a moment in our relationship that I was like, I don't know if we're going to recover from this. And I don't know that we have. I love you, Mom, if you're listening.
I know when we played the game, we were just going at each other.
Oh, yeah.
Just trying to destroy each other as quick as possible. Yeah, mm-hmm. Every time we play a game, we just do that. So, I don't want to keep you for too much longer. Your game seems to be blowing up. You seem to have a lot of people on there. Before we leave, please, once again, tell us what your game's about and how people can find you and your game.
Yeah, thank you. So the game is called Roast, a game of Marsh and Mallow. And we have a website, roast-game.com, that you can go to. Any cozy gaming, any family gaming tags you throw on there, and we'll be right there too.
Well, thank you for doing this with us on our first on-site interview. I hope it is everything you want it to go. Thank you again.
Thank you, guys. Really appreciate it.
All right, you're listening to KBOO Portland. If you're just tuning in, I'm Nate here with James, and this is Winner's Bias. We're talking about getting... No, we're not. I forgot to change that. We're talking about James' experience at PAX, and yeah.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I want to start with saying congratulations to Nick for a successful Kickstarter campaign that just finished. That's great for them. I feel like we also forgot to say that I am at PAX with my friends, Aaron and Ken, and they did also join in on the interview. So if you hear two other random voices that don't sound English, they are my friends.
Yeah, that was fallout from the previous intro we did. So you know, you're kind of getting everything that we did.
I think we're going to move on now to the next interview, which is Tim of Critical Kit LLC. And you can tell that he is another English person, so enjoy his voice as well.
We're back at PAX for our second interview. Here with Tim, the creator of Tabletop RPGs. So Tim, you come here for PAX. What are you selling here today?
So we're selling several couple of the games I've created and a couple of games that we publish for other creators as well. So my main games are Be Like a Crow, Be Like a Cat, and we're also promoting a new game, Punk is Dead, which isn't out yet, but it will be out in about 5 to 6 weeks.
So we've interviewed people who've done card games, and you do tabletop RPGs. Can you explain what a tabletop RPG is?
Yeah, sure. So a tabletop RPG is, if you're playing in the multiplayer environment, it's kind of like collaborative storytelling. But even in the solo environment, which I do write a few games, it's still storytelling. So they're games that try to drive, you know, they're story driven. They're driven around plot and characters, but that plot generally gets made up on the fly.
You said you do solo games. How would a solo, apart from the obvious of being by yourself, how would a solo game be different than playing it with a bunch of people? How does a solo game work?
Yeah, so I guess the biggest difference about a solo game is that you don't have a GM. So you don't have, a GM is someone who actually takes control of the game, takes control of the story, plays other characters that are not played by the players. So, and explains the world to the players. Whereas if you're playing solo, you kind of know everything. So one of the tricks about a solo game is giving people just enough information when they're playing it that they still have to make some things up in their own head. You're not giving them everything. So yeah, it's a tricky thing to, you know, the difference between the two things is quite tricky.
So you can still make it like a playground of the mind that they have to still imagine things and they're not just reading everything along.
Yeah, so it's theater of the mind. And I guess another big difference is that generally with a solo game, unless you're comfortable with talking to yourself, you generally journal them. So a lot of solo games are journaling games where you write something down, or even just bullet point what happened, or draw it if you want. You can do like a comic sequential art. It's entirely up to you how you actually record your story.
So when you created these tabletop RPGs, solo and the group one, what would be like the first step you did to start creating them?
So this is kind of a weird analogy. Going back to an idea, the formulation of an idea. I tend to find it's like getting something stuck in your teeth. If I can't get it out of my head for some time, I have to like examine it a bit further, which is a strange analogy, I know, but it's the best one I've
ever. It's perfect. That works great.
Yeah. So what happens is, one of the first things I do when I feel like it's in my head enough that I've got to explore it, I will explore it a bit more. But then the next thing I do is I go find an artist that can turn this fog that's in my mind into something that's a little bit more tangible. And then once I have the first picture or image of that game, like a scene or a character, from there, that's when it really starts rolling, because then I can get a piece of art and I can use that to actually start inspiring me. So it's kind of a collaborative process with other artists as well for me.
I don't think if the listeners can tell, you are not from America where we are. You are from England like I am.
I certainly am.
Yeah. Can you tell me the difference between the gaming style from England to America? Is there a difference with like how much the game sells or what kind of games people like from here and from in England?
Yeah, so I think the gap's narrow. The difference is narrowing now, and I've noticed that in last year. But we have a very big zine scene in the UK, so we have a lot of smaller games. You know, we have a lot of independent creators, and I know you have independent creators over here. But I noticed when I came last year, there's a lot of big games, big thick core rule books, whereas, you know, our scene is a lot more about independent, small, quick to get into games, because, you know, people don't, they've invested a lot of time in learning D&D or Pathfinder or Call of Cthulhu, and they might be a bit reticent to actually pick up another game, whereas our games take 30 minutes, 20 minutes to learn. A GM can run with them really quickly, so there's not a big financial or even time investment. So I've seen that coming over here now, though, and I've noticed in America there's a very big interest in the smaller games now it's started developing, which has obviously gone in our favour, but, you know, it's great to see it.
Yeah, you said these games take like 30 minutes to play, so they're quite easy to pick up and play. Is that a way you design it to make it easier for newcomers into the gaming hobby to pick up your games?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, so the multiplayer games, yes, we want to encourage people to get into it, whether they're brand new or seasoned role players. It's also easier for a GM to sell it to their players if it's quick to learn, because they've already invested a lot of time in learning. But more so with my solo games, part of the way I design them is it's, let's say you're a new player, but you're intimidated by a lot of things. If you play a solo game, you can pick up a lot of the concepts that are in a multiplayer game. So the mechanics might change, but all the concepts about combat, injury, healing, the general terminology that you use is in a solo game. You can explore that on your own without having to go sit at a table with people, you know, in the first instance, and see if you like it, see if it's for you.
That's great, and I found that finding your group of friends to play a tabletop RPG can be hard. Do you have any ideas of how people might be able to find a group to play a tabletop RPG with?
Oh, that's the holy grail. I mean, it's one of the reasons I write solo games, but it's because you don't have the scheduling problem.
That's why you made your own, so you can just be play that.
Exactly. So, I mean, I guess one thing that I'm trying to explore at the moment is duet games. They really interest me because I think that there's quite a lot of people who might play a game, but their partners don't play gaming, so they lose their partner for maybe 6 hours a week, probably more, playing games. Whereas what they could do is, if with a duet game, they could introduce their partners, have a lot of fun together, and, you know, then that would be a gateway for them to come in. But also what it does do, it means you're only scheduling two people rather than a big group. So that's one thing I'm exploring. A lot of my solo games do actually work as two-player games as well, so baked into them you can actually just play with a friend or a partner, which, you know, obviously a solo game, if you've got a scheduling problem with a solo game, you've got bigger problems than just scheduling. But with a two-player game, it is easier just to get one other person to meet, you know, your schedule.
So how do you approach bringing in players to tabletop role-playing games, which are, as you said, largely collaborative, when they're coming from a board game space where they're used to, like, well, we're all competing against each other and I need to be the one who wins?
Yeah, okay. So one of the things that's quite good that naturally fits into that about making a solo game is you have to give people a ladder to hang for their story. So you don't dictate to them where their story's going, but you need to give them something that keeps the story moving, because they haven't got a GM to do that. So what we do is we introduce, generally, my personal style of building these games is to have a turn-based system. And what's good about a turn-based system is that we can then introduce phases, we can introduce concepts that board gamers are used to, and especially with a hex crawl or something, they know they've got a marker that they have to move around a map. So what we're actually doing is we are rather underhandedly making board gamers into role players. So they just don't realize it yet.
So your game, Punk is Dead, yep, as James here astutely pointed out, you're British.
Yes.
So I assume a lot of the inspiration comes from the British side of Punk. Is there any anything that you're bringing in from, like, the SoCal movement of, like, the 80s and 90s in punk rock?
Okay, so that's a good question. I'm glad you phrased that in that way, because it is set in the United Kingdom is my game, and I would never be as bold to say that the punk is a UK thing. There's different strains of punk. I agree with that. So my game is set in the UK, but effectively it is abstract enough about punk that you can actually play any movement you want. And as a case in point is in the actual the game that we're publishing, we hit a stretch goal for hip-hop roles. So we've actually got a DJ, an MC, and a breakdancer. So to me, hip-hop is punk. I don't care who I offend with saying that. I feel like it's in the spirit of punk.
They grew up together.
Exactly. And so coming back to your point, there isn't anything that says what kind of punk you need to be. What I would say, and I say this as it's kind of half a joke when I say it to people on the stand when I'm telling them about Punk is Dead, is it's probably better if you can't write a song, if you've never written a song before, because that's how you write a punk song.
All right, before we go, I would like to give you one more chance to let us know about your games and where people can find you.
Yeah, sure. So I'll tell you about my flagship games. They are Be Like a Crow, Be Like a Cat. I've also got a load of strange little RPGs, and probably my next big game is Punk is Dead. You can find us at criticalkit.co.uk. We've also got criticalkit.us, but it's not as well stocked at the moment as the .co.uk site. But if you are from the States, we will find a way to get the games to you quickly and at a good price.
Well, thank you again, and I will let you get off.
Yeah, thank you so much.
All right, James, great job, great work. And listener, you don't know this, but James has made the ultimate sacrifice for you. He had to listen to himself talk.
That was just the worst thing. I mean, they were lovely interviews. All the other voices were great, but God, listening to mine, I just couldn't do it.
All right, James, so we have a few minutes left here. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what PAX is like? Like, you know, when you think of a convention, you think of Comic-Con, where people are dressing up in cosplay. Do people do this at a video game and board game convention?
They do, and you will be surprised that it's mostly based around video game dressing up. But yeah, there are people who dress up. I don't think it's as popular as cosplaying as would be in a Comic-Con. But as you walk around, you do find people dressed up as their favorite character or their favorite game. It's like, this has only been my second year going to PAX. And the first time I went there, because we said this before, I'm more into video games than board games. You're trying to drag me out of that and get into board games.
I know, we need to get James Games going again.
Yeah, it's been a while since we've done that. So my big side of PAX would be playing the video games, because there's different sections of PAX that are in different buildings. So always on the first day, we go around the video games, and you see a lot of like the big companies with their big new ones. Then you see all like the indie video games with like their small ones coming out, and they just want people to try it and test it and see how they could improve or whatever. And it's always fun being almost like a tester for these people, or just like sometimes you go in and you see companies of games you've played before, or like old games you've played, and you're like, oh, you can talk to the person who created this game, and it is. I always find that really fun. And it's almost like getting a little bit starstruck, being like, you made this game, I love this game.
Did you get a chance to play any board games?
We played a couple. We usually play the board games at night, because they have this big room where you can rent the board game, and then they have tables filled with board games. We played, for the first time, I played Codenames, which is a very, like...
It's a classic.
Yeah, very run-of-the-mill kind of party game. And it's the first time I played it. And yeah, I enjoyed it. We tried a new game there that came out at PAX. I think me and my friends had a problem with the instructions, and none of us knew how to play the game. So we all got confused and we didn't realize how to play it. And then it got into anger with each other.
Yeah. And so I want to rephrase what you said about Codenames. So you call it a run-of-the-mill party game, and that kind of makes it sound like it's not awesome. It's a great party game where you're like on teams trying to get people to like guess words based on clues and numbers. You would say like baseball 3, and you'd be trying to find on a field of words or pictures what the hint giver is giving, and it's great. And the designer of that game just has bonkers designs, and the fact that Codenames hit the way it did is so weird. His name's Vlada Kvadl, something like that.
I couldn't tell you.
I can try to tell you, but I don't know exactly how to pronounce it.
Oh, I didn't mean it like it's run-of-the-mill and simple. I meant more like it is a well-known game. Like it is like on like the same level as I feel like on the
Target. Yeah,
it's everywhere. So it's a bit weird that it was the first time I tried it.
All right. Well, thank you so much for the interviews, James. And thank you all for listening to Winner's Bias. And congratulations to JW for winning the drawing.
Congratulations.
And if you would like to comment on the show, have any questions, or suggest discussion topics, you can email us at winnersbias@kboo.org. I'm Nate.
And I'm James. We want to remind you that KBOO is a volunteer-powered community platform. That means we are funded by you, the listener. If you enjoyed the program today, please consider showing your support by making a contribution. Just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. And remember, it's not about the games you play, but all the creators you speak to along the way. Have a good one.
Tune to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.